Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz post fight thoughts.
Dun, dun, dun. Hey guys, Fight Junkie here. As usual, before we jump into this next episode, I want to remind you guys, you can hit me up on Twitter at FightJunkieCom. Follow me on Parler at FightJunkie. Listen to me on Anchor, Spotify, Google, Apple, Amazon. Basically, anywhere you can find a podcast, I'll be there. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Oh wait, hold up. Scratch that. YouTube deleted my channel. Let me think. Okay, I got it. You can also subscribe to the Rumble channel. Rumble.com/FightJunkie. Want live stream? Twitch.tv/RealFightJunkie.
The fight turned out to be pretty damn entertaining. If you didn't get a chance to watch it, I'm sure you already know the results. It was Jake Paul wins via unanimous 10-round, not 8, 10-round decision. The fight was the most searched thing on Saturday for Google. I believe it had 5 million searches. Yes, 5 million searches. And that brings me to my point of the old dinosaurs in the sport truly and utterly despise Jake Paul. Once you get past the influencer promotional thing, the YouTuber, the I'm an influencer, you're fighting exhibitions, you're fighting MMA fighters, blah, 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 blah. We've all heard that. But from my perspective, he pays his actual opponents extremely well. He pays all the undercard fighters on the actual card extremely well. He's changed Amanda Serrano's life, career, trajectory. Now she's out there promoting how she can help other women in the sport, a.k.a. Heather Hardy, who she got a six-figure payday. I mean, so it seems to me he started the fighters union with Anderson Silva. Like, that's legit. They're actively working on that, from what I understand. So, I mean, everything, when you look at that, it seems to me like he's doing a lot more in the sport than the old dinosaurs ever did. And not only that, but he's tapped into a different market, and to me that's what seems to be able to the really thorn in everybody's side, is that he gets a lot of butts in seats and eyeballs on screens, and it pisses people off because they're like, he's not a quality fighter, he's doing exhibitions, he's fighting YouTubers, he's fighting old MMA fighters. When, you know, even with his fight against Tommy Fury, everybody doesn't think Tommy Fury is very good. But it doesn't matter. Like, he even lost to Tommy in the split decision, and it doesn't seem like he's missed the beat, right? Like, he's still very popular. He's still doing everything that he was. The numbers are still going to be tremendous. Everybody's still making a lot of money. And the old dogs, the old cats, the old dinosaurs in the game, they just cannot wrap their head around it, and he gets a lot of hate for it. I think you have to take it for what it is. Like, I believe he's 3 years in the sport. I think he has 7 or 8 fights total. I think he had 1 amateur fight. Like, I mean, really, he's a novice. The problem here is that he's a novice that's extremely popular, making a lot of money, and people that have been in the sport or around the sport or involved in the sport get pissed off because they're not seeing the same type of success that Jake Paul is. Well, whose fault is that, really, if you think about it, right? I mean, he has MVP promotions, so he's doing his own thing to a degree as much as he can. He brought Nate in, I believe, Real Fight Inc., which is Nate's promotional company, had something to do. I think it was a co-promotion as well. So he's cutting the cake up and giving it to other people as well. Maybe that's the problem with the old dinosaurs, right? They're too damn greedy. They want to keep everything in-house. This is why we don't see the fights being made. This is why you don't see the co-promotions. I mean, we just had Spence, Bud Crawford, that took, I believe, 5 years to make. We've talked about this many times with many fights of many decades. Mayweather Pacquiao, you still have Tyson and Usyk. Like, I mean, you can go on and on and on and down the line. And it seems to me Jake Paul is giving the fans the fights that they want to see. Now, it may not be the old school, hardcore, traditional boxing fans that you think of these are not the fights they're interested, but he's not going for that. He's going for an entirely different market, and people don't understand that he does not give a rat's ass if the old boxing heads like his shows, watch his shows, but I guarantee you they will talk about his shows. He's on a different kind of level when it comes to the promotion, because he'll absorb all the love from the followers and he'll absorb all the hate from the people that can't stand him. And in the same breath, he's getting both sides of the coin, right? He's getting the people that can't stand him to talk about him and make him trending. And then he's getting the people that actually pay to watch the fight or buy his merch or go to the events or whatever the case is. And people just can't wrap their head around how this is possible for a novice boxer who's not even fighting quote-unquote real fighters. Now, obviously, if you know anything about Nate Diaz, you know he's a real fighter. He's not a boxer, but he is a real fighter. It was funny to me, the people that have never watched Nate, and they're just like so amazed at his fighting style, the way that he conducts himself in the ring, his cardio, his toughness. Like, it truly is kind of surprising, because I'm obviously into both sports big time, but it's really surprising when you only have boxing heads that watch an MMA fight or an MMA fighter fight, and they're just like blown away. Like, this is actually sometime the first people that have ever watched Nate Diaz fight for the first time ever. That's I mean, how many fights does he have in the U.S.? That's kind of astonishing, but it's true. Even on the broadcast, like, Sean Porter's like, man, this guy. If you watched Nate Diaz in any of his USC fights, you knew what you were going to get heading into this. It didn't matter if it was 10-ounce gloves, 8-ounce gloves. It didn't matter if it was 8 rounds, 10 rounds, 12 rounds. It didn't matter if it was a boxing match or MMA match. He's going to fight the exact same way, as he always does, and he did. And props to Nate. He took a hell of a beating. Jake Paul put a lot of heat on him, especially early, and he absorbed it all. I mean, it's not surprising as tough as he is, but man, he's getting up there in age. He's had a lot of wars, and he took those punches pretty well. I mean, was he hurt a lot in the fight? I think so. He plays it off, so it's hard to tell with Nate when he's truly actually hurt, but I do think he was hurt a lot in the fight. Of course, he was dropped in the fifth round of the fight. The first round, he was hurt pretty bad in the fight. He didn't go down. But, I mean, he did what he could do at this stage of his career in a combat sport that he's not proficient in. I know he trains in boxing a lot, but sparring and training and fighting is different. You saw that tonight, because obviously he sparred far more experienced and better fighters than Jake Paul, but he was unable to beat Jake Paul in a fight on a point system over 10 rounds. 10 rounds that the Diaz camp wanted, because originally it was scheduled for 8, which, if you follow Jake Paul's career, that's not surprising, because that's generally what he fights, is 8 rounds. But I think this was a 10 round fight for him that I believe was his 7th or 8th fight, and I don't think anybody other than Tyson Fury did that in their like 7th or 8th fight. I saw something on social media where that was posted, where other fighters like Bud and Floyd and I'm not sure if they had Pacquiao on there, but they had went like 6 rounds and 4 rounds. And so he was saying, hey, look, what I'm doing is not traditional. I'm doing it a different way. And some might say that I'm doing it an easier way, but look, I just went 10 rounds in my 7th or 8th pro fight. And look at these great fighters. They were going 4 and 6 rounds. So, I mean, he has a point there. It was against an MMA fighter, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But still, going 10 rounds, you thought that would favor Nate going into the fight. And I still do think, even though Jake Paul looked improved to me over Tommy Fury, which, in all honesty, if we're being honest here, that's not difficult, because he looked like utter and complete trash against Tommy Fury. Now, I know the comeback to that immediately is, well, he fought an actual boxer, and that's hard to argue, because Tommy Fury is an actual boxer. Even if you don't think he's very good, he is an actual boxer. But even his cardio looked better against Nate, because even though I think he's always going to have cardio issues, there's something about him with his cardio. Like, I'm not sure if he's got baby lungs, if he's carrying too much muscle, if he just doesn't know how to control his breathing, but there is something with his cardio, because even though I think his cardio improved in this fight and he looked better in this fight, I still think he has to manage it. And I think that's why you see these lulls in his fights. And of course, the holding. He is a big holder, but even when he was doing better where he wasn't holding, you could see he was just popping a couple of jabs out, trying to land a hard right hand or a left hook, and then he's got to manage his cardio. So he almost goes in prevent defense at that point, gets his cardio, his gas tank, get a little more gas in there, and then he does the same thing over and over. Nate was too slow, and he didn't possess the type of power that would bother Jake Paul, so he wasn't able to take advantage of the lulls. But I'm certain as the competition level increases, that's going to be a big problem for him, because I saw in spots against Nate Diaz the same way it was glaring in Tommy Fury, and you've seen it in other fights against Tyron Woodley, like he fades in every single fight. It's just to what degree. I think in this fight he still faded, but he managed it better. He disguised it better by using the jab. Like, his team was really focused on make sure that you're using the jab, because it disguises the lulls and his cardio drop when you are still able to shoot the jab. And he was shooting a good jab. It wasn't a lazy jab. So his cardio was better. I do think he was in better shape. But let me tell you, man, Jake Paul can never come into one of these fights in terrible shape, because he's got a real chance of losing against anybody, because he's got like 4 to 5 rounds of balls to the wall cardio. And then like clockwork, that he hits the wall, and then at this point, he has to start managing it. I mean, you saw that in the first round. In the first round, when he came out and he really went aggressively at Diaz, I'm thinking to myself the entire time, man, if you don't get him out of here, right? If you don't get him out of here. And we talked about that in the pre-fight podcast, that one of the game plans of Diaz would be throw all your punches at me, get tired, and then I'm going to come on. And he did that in spots. He just wasn't able to do it consistently enough to win the rounds. But he did that in spots. When Jake Paul got tired, you saw Nate Diaz come on. That's by design. And anybody who's fighting Jake Paul should know that. If you can get him to open up and absorb the shots, that's the key, right? Because you got to get past 4 or 5 rounds of hard, powerful shots, because he can hit. I think he's knocked down everybody he's faced, actually. He can hit, so you got to be wary of that. You got to be on point. Like, you got to be dressed down in defense, because he can get you out of there. But there's an opportunity there, because I do think he has cardio issues. And even though it was improved, I still think the cardio issues are there. And you have to factor that in anytime you're betting on Jake Paul, because I've seen it over and over and over again since he started this journey, that he has cardio issues. The cardio issues appear to remain, and even though he did better, they're still there. You just got to look for him. So I think he's going to need a little bit higher level of an opponent, somebody who is decent and in good shape, to be able to take advantage of that. Like in the Tommy Fury fight, even though I don't consider Tommy Fury very good, he understands the basics well. And even though he got knocked down, even though it was a close fight, even though it was a split decision, Jake Paul, in my opinion, just looked utterly like complete trash in that fight. I've never seen him look that bad, including his cardio. So if they rematch and he faced a Jake Paul that has the cardio that we saw last night, I think Paul can probably eke it out, because that fight, in my opinion, was the worst that I've seen Jake Paul look, and it was still a split decision, and he was still able to knock Tommy Fury down. Speaking of Tommy Fury, he's fighting KSI in an exhibition. Yeah, can you believe that? Right? I didn't even, I just found that out. I thought the fight was a fight, but it's an exhibition. So KSI obviously is calling Jake Paul out after the fight, saying, after I beat Tommy Fury, you can rematch Tommy Fury, and then the winner faces me. I'm the big boss, blah, 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 blah. The dude's fighting no-hopers and exhibitions. Like, you can say what you want about Jake Paul, but the real fight's going on a real record. KSI's not even doing that. Like, he's fighting a bunch of no-hopers and exhibitions. Like, that's insane to me. Why are you not fighting these no-hopers in a real fight and padding your record? So then you can be like, well, I'm 4-0. I'm undefeated in boxing, Jake Paul. You have already lost. And build up the promotion a little bit better. It's very difficult when you're fighting no-hopers in exhibition fights, while Jake Paul's over here doing massive numbers against name fighters. They may not be boxers, but they have names, and he's selling out arenas, and he's doing massive pay-per-view buys, and doing massive social media searches and Google searches and all of these things, and
KSI's over here fighting exhibitions. In fact, they must be paying Tommy Fury a lot of money. Because, I mean, I guess it's a win-win for Tommy unless he loses the KSI. Because, good lord, but he'll still have his undefeated record intact. But that might blow the Jake Paul rematch out of the water. I don't even know how they're going to do that. I mean, I guess if it goes however many rounds it's scheduled to go, they're going to do it like they always do, and it's just an automatic draw. Both fighters' hands are raised, and yay, everybody claps and whatever. But heaven forbid if he got knocked out, then, right? Like, it still may not go on his record, but Jake Paul would be like, oh, my Lord, I might be able to bypass Tommy Fury. I'm not sure if the KSI fight will ever come off. I'm kind of sick of hearing about it, to be honest with you. Because like I said, KSI is not even a professional fighter. And so they could have built this up a much, much larger. Because when they did meet, then KSI would have a 3 or 4 or 5-0 boxing record. And then it would actually be for all the marbles. But now as it goes, like, it'll still be huge, but you're going to have all the old boxing heads going, oh, he's fighting an exhibition guy, another pro debut guy. He has no fights, not understanding that KSI is another popular influencer and would be able to, and has been able to put butts in seats with a Misfit Boxing and does big numbers on social media. So I get where people would enjoy watching that fight, but it's just kind of annoying at this point. Like, put up or shut up, man. I'm kind of sick of hearing about it. Like, fight already, right? You got an opportunity here, because if you beat Tommy Fury or however that works with his exhibition, go straight into Jake Paul. Otherwise, who wants to sit there and watch him fight another 15 exhibitions while Jake Paul is trying to move up the ladder and pad his professional record? Because apparently he wants to rematch Nate Diaz in PFL, which is another weird thing, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not quite sure why Jake Paul did the whole PFL thing. Obviously, there's money involved, but it does seem strange because he has so much momentum in boxing and is making so much money and has so many eyes on him and can pretty much dictate who he fights, which is insane. I mean, he has sub-10 fights. And dictate the compensation that everybody's going to get and control who's on the undercard and promote who he wants, like Amanda Serrano was a co-main. Like, these are powerful positions, but why would you go in MMA and then have to face, you know, well, I'm sure they'll match him very carefully, but even like Nate Diaz, the joke was, you know, he had the standing guillotine in the 9th round, and in the 1st round he had the single leg and this, that, and the other. But those things are true, like in MMA, in those same positions, this fight's a totally different outcome. I think, personally, obviously, because I've watched Nate for a long time, that in an MMA fight, he beats Jake Paul. Because you saw that Nate Diaz was able to hang, not beat, but able to hang with Jake Paul in a boxing match. And in those positions where there was clinch positions, or where he had his back, or the guillotine, or the single leg, or all these things that we're joking about now, that's fight changers right there. Because Nate knows how to fight in MMA. And not only that, but you're going to have 5-minute rounds instead of 3-minute rounds. And we're already not sold on Jake's cardio. So I think Nate has the advantage in an MMA fight. Supposedly offers $10 million for an MMA fight in PFL. I know Nate's stipulation is that his company, Real Fight Inc., has to be involved in it. That could be the stickler that causes the fight not to come off. That would suck if that happened, because that's a nice payday for Nate, especially at the end of his career, because he is at the end of the career. I don't care if he goes back to the UFC, if it's Real Fight Inc. that he's going to be fighting in and promoting, if it's a combination of PFL or boxing or whatever the case is. Obviously, he's 38. He's taking a lot of damage. You saw last night, like, that style and stuff, he's able to still win fans and still be popular. Even when he loses, and that's very strange, but he's been able to do that throughout his entire UFC career as well. Even when he loses, he like never really loses. That's insane. But he's not winning fights consistently, and that only works for so long, especially in the boxing game, because the boxing heads are different than MMA fans. Like, you don't see a lot of top tier boxers on headlining shows and in bright light spots where they have a lot of losses. It's just not accepted in boxing, and that's one of the reasons that you see so many fights that don't get made, and a lot of protection of records, and even promoters go out of their way to make sure they protect the guys, because it's just not as sellable
in the boxing world as it is in the MMA world, where they don't really care as much about records. They just want to see matchups, and styles make fights. So they're like, oh, this guy's really good at this, and this guy's not so good at this, as they're more cared about the matchups than they are about the records, because they know styles make fights, and maybe somebody has faced a couple of submission artists, grapplers that they have struggled against, but they're a really high level striker. So they kind of disregard those losses when he's matched up against another striker and be like, man, this is going to be an amazing fight. These are two great strikers. He's had a bad run because he's faced a couple of submission guys, but now he gets a striker. Like, they are able to overlook it a lot quicker than boxing guys. Boxing guys are like, oh my Lord, you lost to this guy back in 2019. Like, that's just how it is. Speaking of, the Anthony Joshua fight that is now canceled with Dillian White. Well, one of the rumored replacements is Hasim Rockman Jr. Well, what's the first thing that comes out of everyone's mouth? First of all, like, you're like, Rockman? Really? But this guy lost to an MMA fighter. He got knocked out by an MMA fighter. Like, right? Like, right away. Like, so that's already going to be a tough sell for Eddie on pay-per-view. You put him in against Rockman, and you're like, really? You're putting AJ in with a dude who got knocked out by an ex-MMA fighter? Like, very, very different than MMA. So, I think Diaz has life left in him. But I think that he should go for the big money opportunities as much as he can, whether that is in PFL, the UFC, or boxing, because I think the writing's on the wall. That's not going to last for too much longer, and he has absorbed a lot of damage. You saw that last night if you watched the fight. Like, he has a good chin. He's durable. He didn't cut up as much as I thought. That right eye in the first round, when it swelled up, I'm like, oh, that's going to be it, man. I think Stitch was in his corner. Stitch, the cut man, he's very, very good. I'm like, man, this eye, how's it going to last 10 rounds? But it just seemed to stop swelling. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think Stitch did a great job, because initially it looked like, even though it wasn't cut, like it was going to swell completely shut. And then, obviously, another thing, double standard in boxing and MMA. In boxing, they'll stop that fight. In MMA, you can fight with your eyeball hanging out. Same commissions, right? Just same doctors, but for some reason, MMA, you're allowed to fight. Boxing, bloody nose, hey, we got to stop it. Protection of the fighter. Speaking of the Heather Hardy fight, people going bonkers that fight was able to go 10 rounds, and nothing but on social media about how it was a complete mismatch and there's no reason for the last 5 rounds, and that, and then some people were saying Serrano carried her because they're friends and this, that, and the other. But like in MMA, there's no chance that fight gets stopped, because although Heather was taking an ass whooping, she was game, and she was, I don't want to say competitive, but she was game and throwing back. Like, there wasn't a lot of opportunities where she was just taking, you know, loads and loads of combination punches and not punching back. I thought the last round, maybe the last minute, the last 30 seconds, it was getting dicey. Certainly if they had 3-minute rounds, 12 rounds, Hardy doesn't go the distance. We talked about this in the pre-fight podcast. We took Serrano by decision, which was not the favored bet. It was Serrano to win inside was a favored bet, because everybody anticipated this was a mismatch. Serrano was on a different level. That's true. Hardy's 41, and that she wouldn't be able to take all the punches from Amanda Serrano. But Serrano hasn't scored a knockout, I think, now in 6 fights. It covers a couple of years. They're friends, and Hardy's super tough. I think you saw that in the fight. Like, she's not going to just go down. She never wanted to look for an out. There was a couple opportunities there with the doctor where she could have easily gotten out of there. Never crossed her mind. In fact, it was opposite, where she was like, why the hell are you even questioning me? Do I want to continue? And so I thought that fight had a good opportunity to go the distance, especially with the 2-minute rounds and the 10 round limit, and that worked out well. But Hardy did take a lot of damage, and in all honesty, had the fight been stopped, it would have been difficult to raise a stink about it, other than we would have lost our wager on Amanda by decision, because she wasn't competitive. I thought she didn't get any credit at all.
in the fight, because some judge, I think, didn't even give her a round. I think she won at least one round. Two is probably generous, but I think she won one round. But yeah, it was a mismatch. But you see mismatches. And a lot of times these mismatches aren't stopped. So I'm not sure if people had bet Serrano inside and that's why they were so upset about it. Or was it really they were worried about a 41-year-old mother, you know, taking too much abuse in a fight? But then you have the other people who are saying, oh, Serrano carried her. So what is it, right? Like, if she's taking too much abuse and it should be stopped, or Serrano carrying her, maybe it's a combination of both. I don't know, but we got the win there, so that was nice. But as far as Jake Paul moving forward, I mean, the PFL thing, will it happen? I mean, Ngannou signed Francis, the MMA former champion, is signed to PFL as well, and he's going straight into a Tyson Fury bout. So it seems to me that PFL doesn't really hold the feet to the fire to get their signed influencers or superstars or whoever, whatever, however you want to describe them, to actually fight in PFL, which is kind of strange. I'm not sure if Jake is contractually obligated to fight in PFL in a certain timeline. Maybe that's why he said Nate, but I don't know. I think it takes a little bit of luster off of him if he goes to PFL and loses, even if it is against Nate, because then what? I mean, do you run it back in boxing again and then run it back in PFL? Like, the people are only going to go for that for so long, but we'll have to see. I mean, as far as if that doesn't come off in boxing, well, it's right back to what we started before he lost to Tommy Fury. Really, he has the world in his hand. He can pretty much pick anybody. I mean, you have so many people after every single Jake Paul fight calling him out. I mean, even Conor McGregor still. But to be honest, Conor McGregor calls everybody out after every fight. And he hasn't fought in, what, a couple of years? I don't even think he's in the VADA or USADA drug testing pools. So I mean, what are you talking about, right? Like, you're calling out every single fighter after every single match and MMA or boxing, and I don't even think he's eligible to fight at this point. So that's, I thought Jake Paul said the best. He's like, I'm not worried about this guy. He needs to go into rehab. I think that was the best thing he could say, because at this point, he's just a complete and utter joke. I mean, it's sad what's happened to this guy, but he's a complete and utter joke. Like, he talks about fighting more than he fights. You know what I mean? He talks about all these different opponents, and we're not even sure the Chandler fight's going to come off. Like, even Chandler's like, dude, it's not that hard, pee in a cup. So that fight may not even come off. So throwing out Conor McGregor's name there, yeah, he's got all of the regular guys. And, of course, he's still talking about Canelo. But he's got all of the regular guys that were there prior to the Tommy Fury loss that are still there, and probably even more people that want to fight him, because the old boxing heads and the old dinosaurs at these networks and everybody else that wants to bitch and moan and say this, that, and the other, the facts are the facts, right? When you're talking about a business, this dude is a good businessman. His brother, too. You just saw that with the WWE. They're good businessmen. And so he knows what he's doing in that regard. And so people want to be associated with him and his company. That's just how it is. Whether they're fighting him or fighting on the other card, they want a piece of Jake Paul because it's profitable. So when you have a company like MVP Promotions and they're profitable and they're paying people well and everybody associated with the promotion is happy when all is said and done, then the world is pretty much in your hand and you can pretty much choose which direction you go. That's why I said it was kind of strange to me. He didn't need PFL, in my opinion. He did not need to go the direction of PFL. And I hope that it doesn't screw up the trajectory that he's got going in boxing, because that fight last night was entertaining. You just got to take it for what it is. Nobody said that Jake Paul can beat Canelo. Who's saying that? Only Jake Paul is saying that. Nobody else is saying that. Old boxing heads, new boxing heads, Jake Paul fans, Jake Paul haters, nobody's saying he's going to go beat Canelo. Nobody's even asking for that fight right now. That's a goal that Jake Paul set for himself to keep him going on his goals and journeys to accomplish something. All right, fine. But the fights that he's putting on are pretty entertaining. I thought the fight last night was very entertaining because he had a guy that was able to absorb his punches, that would play games in the ring with him, would press him, and has good cardio. So we got to see more of Jake, and it was 10 rounds, first time. So we got to see more of Jake Paul, and we got to critique more of Jake Paul. And then you say, hey, man, this was a really entertaining fight. This guy was able to absorb a lot of damage. He was able to give back some resistance. He was able to play some games against Jake Paul. You know, threw him in the guillotine and said, no, I already beat you, dude. Oh, I had the single leg in the first. I already beat you. The fight's over in the ninth round. Like, these things are entertaining. And the fight itself was pretty dang good. Again, how many fights have you watched on the low level of a sub-10 fighter and they're trash, right? Or they're put in A-side, B-side with massive talent gaps. Massive. You see that all the time on major networks. So the only reason that I can discern that Jake gets the hate for him doing similar things that other pro fighters have done, I'm talking about the superstars in the sport that have done, where they've been in fights that you know the outcome is already written, and the talent gap is gigantic. If there's odds, they're a tremendous favorite, and you already know the outcome before the bell rings. Well, Jake Paul is doing the same thing, but he's getting massive amounts of publicity and eyeballs and dollars for doing it. And it seems to upset a lot of people. That should tell you where the sport is. Why are people so upset with somebody having success? Because don't we always hear, oh, fighters need to be paid more? We hear this all the time in the boxing and the UFC argument. Boxers and promoters and networks, boy, they throw shade all the time at the UFC. And rightfully so, that the fighters need to be paid more. Right? And they need to be taken care of. And Daddy Dana with the monopoly and this, that, and the other. But then when you have a guy who's in their sport making a whole bunch of bake and spreading it around, it's nothing but hate and vile towards him. Oh, he's not really this. He's not really that. Oh, he can't do this. Oh, he's doing this. What's the problem? Everybody involved with it seems to be happy. The fans seem to be happy. The fighters that he faced seem to be happy. The undercard fighters seem to be happy. The promoters, whether they're co or MVP, seem to be happy with the numbers they're doing and the pay-per-view numbers and the streaming numbers and the ticket sales, right? The promotion seems to go smooth. I mean, everything on the surface seems okay. So you got to ask yourself, why are the old dinosaurs so upset? That's it for this episode of Fight Junkie. I will sock it to you tomorrow, baby. Fight Junkie out.